They headed out 2 leagues to regroup, and the sea chariots came alongside, and with difficulty in the heaving waves, they reformed the big skimmer. They'd lost 7 blackguards. Another had taken a ball in the elbow. She would be crippled. The rest had minor injuries, burns and little cuts and pulled muscles from maneuvering their chariots too sharply. One had a musket ball burn and a streak along his neck that was going to leave a scar. He looked perversely pleased about it. A breath more to the left, and it would have cut his carotid. Kruxer was wide-eyed, blinking a lot, but unhurt.
Breaker, did you do what I think you did back there?
Kruxer looked at the blackguards.
Am I the only one who saw him blow up half the ship?
We saw. Well done, Breaker.
Well done! It was fucking awesome!
Iron Fist grinned and didn't reprove Kruxer for cursing.
Did you blow up the whole ship, too?
No, that was him.
Kip had been looking at his father already. Gavin was staring at him with a strange intensity that wasn't wholly approving. Kip thought he would be proud of him, but again, there it was, that sense that under everything, Gavin was holding out on Kip, avoiding embracing him fully.
How'd you do it?
Kip thought the blackguard's name was Norrell. Gavin looked displeased. For a moment, Kip thought he wasn't going to answer, but then Gavin's eyes passed over the rest of the blackguards. They'd lost almost half their number today.
I made a golem of a rat and willed it to go to the powder keg to explode. It's the kind of thing a white would think of, so there would have been one posted in the hall to stop any such thing. I figured the explosion gave me an opening. Figured right.
But making golems is forbidden.
Kip knew it was stupid the second he said it. It had worked. It had probably saved their lives. It had definitely won the fight.
I'll decide what's forbidden. We'll eat here. Dress the wounds we can, then head home.
They ate silently, everyone aware of the places that were empty. They'd won. They'd killed 700 men or more at the cost of 7. By any measure, it wasn't only a victory, it was a great victory. And yet, the blackguards were silent, eating like automatons. Not hungry, but disciplined enough to know that their bodies needed the sustenance after a hard fight.
You do this all the time, don't you?
They were sitting on the deck, munching hard biscuits and sausage.
Sink ships?
That ship could have sunk half our navy before we arrived in Natosh. But we didn't even know it was here. The threat's gone. So to those idiot generals, it will be like this never happened. We'll tell the story of what we did today and some won't believe us. Most will believe we're exaggerating to make ourselves look good. But even those who do believe us won't know what we went through to do it. They won't understand what we faced here.
Gavin gave a little shrug.
You do this all the time. You've been doing this since the war. You save people without them even knowing. You've stopped wars. You've sunk pirates. You've put down whites. You've killed brigand companies single-handed. All without bragging or even asking for thanks. You are he who fights before us, indeed. Promachos.
Today we were Promachoi together.
The Spectrum granted you that title long ago, and then they took it away. They can take your title, my lord, but they can't take your name. We blackguards know about secret names. We know about naming a thing what it is. You, Lord Prism, are Promachos. Thank you, Promachos, for all you've done that I don't know. For the prices you've paid that I can't understand. For doing what others couldn't or wouldn't. Thank you. And know this, the Blackguard was created with twin purposes. To watch for and to watch the Prism. You've always distrusted us because of the latter, as well you should. But I tell you this day that the Blackguard will never turn against you so long as I draw breath. It is an honor to serve you, Promachos. And serve you we shall, blood and bone.
Blood and bone.
Gavin couldn't meet their eyes.
I'm not the man you think I am.
Are you the man I've served these past 10 years?
I am.
Then, perhaps, my lord, you're not the man you think you are.
Gavin flashed a grin and seemed abruptly himself once more.
You've got a stubborn streak a league wide, don't you?
And 2 leagues deep. And don't you forget it.
Iron Fist stood up and turned to the blackguards.
All right, you laggards, ready up! Let's go home! Tomorrow we do it again!
Your intelligence is abysmal.
Gavin spoke to the generals around the cabin.
Their plan, their first plan at least, is simple. They stop our ships before we can get there. Without our troops and supplies, Rue will fall in days. You didn't come prepared for a sea battle. We've got a dozen warships. They have 50.
You've invented some new means of travel.
Andros Guile was the reason this room was bathed in blue light.
That's how you're scouting. Tell us about this.
Gavin ignored him and left to get some rest before the battle. Gavin woke before dawn. He dressed in the darkness and bound his hair back.
Commander?
They walked out onto the deck together where the Blackguards were checking their gear. They'd taken down the biggest ship in the Color Prince's navy yesterday, but they were professionals. They knew they weren't invincible. A musket ball didn't care if it had been fired by a man on a great ship or an idiot in a dory. Anyone could die. Anytime. Kip was standing with them, looking like he was wound tight enough to thrum.
I'm not going with you today. I've other work to do that may give us some slim chance for victory. Probably not, but it's worth trying.
Can I send anyone with you?
Not for this. I won't be in danger, though. Not physical danger, anyway.
Kip?
Gavin turned and looked at the boy, who was eavesdropping and making a small attempt at pretending not to be.
Kip, you can't come with me. Not for this. You can make up your own mind about whether you want to go with the Blackguards to sink ships.
I'll fight, sir.
Yes, you will.
High Lord Prism, we look at the design we put together.
Gavin followed Norrell over to a pile of munitions. Someone had designed great discs, bigger than a shield, with a grenado's trigger mechanism. Gavin didn't understand. Little Piper pushed a tiny woman forward.
It's Nero's design.
She wasn't even one of the Blackguards who'd gone with them yesterday.
From hearing the stories, I figured the best advantage we have is that we can close quickly.
Nero showed how the disc had teeth and red Luxon on the bottom.
The driver brings the sea chariot right next to the ship, and the archer slaps this onto the hull.
It was brilliant in its simplicity, but the design wasn't right. The disc could be hardened at the back so that most of the explosive force went into the hull, and there was no way you'd want such a short fuse on an explosive this powerful. And it needed shrapnel. And the red on the backside needed to be covered with a thin layer of yellow that could be stripped off just prior to placement so the red didn't lose its stickiness and so the discs could be stacked. Then the sea chariots would need to be... He was getting ahead of himself. He started calling out for the items he needed, and the Blackguards delivered them promptly. Then Gavin made two different designs, one lighter and one heavier. He hefted both. The heavier one packed more explosive power, but power was no good if you couldn't get it where it was needed. He handed them around. The Blackguards decided on the heavier design. Gavin gave them instructions then, and they made a line, the Blackguards copying the backplate and filling the reservoir half full with nails and musket balls and forming the hooks. Gavin made the fuses and the yellow and red Luxon mixture to fill the reservoir. A couple of reds applied the right amount of sticky red Luxon to the backs, another drafter put a tiny layer of lubricative orange on top of that, and Gavin covered it with a thin plate of yellow.
Hull wrecker.
Gavin barely paused as he checked that the fuses on everyone were drafted correctly.
Well done, Nera. You've saved a lot of lives today.
But my lord, you made it 100 times better.
So I saved lives too. We're a team, right?
He smiled at her, and she blushed. Gavin moved to get onto his own sea chariot. It was slightly modified from the earlier versions. Another experiment. He was always experimenting. A young Blackguard was standing there to hold the boat steady when Gavin pulled it loose of the rest. The Blackguard was Gavin Grayling. It felt like a sledge at the center of Gavin's chest. He met the eyes of the young man who'd lied to save his life.
I'll try to be worthy of it.
The young Blackguard said nothing. His face showed nothing. Gavin got on his sea chariot. He wanted to give more orders and advice to Commander Iron Fist, but the man knew what he was doing. He would do the maximum damage with the minimum loss of life possible. He didn't need Gavin to tell him how to do that, so Gavin left. He sped across the seas, which today were a great deal calmer than they had been yesterday. That fact alone would probably save more of the Blackguards than Nero's and Gavin's invention. For Gavin, it didn't mean much, except that his trip was somewhat smoother and faster than it would have been. The sun was past its zenith when Gavin turned the skimmer into the bay at Sears Island. He could see that his seawall was still in excellent order, and there were dozens of fishing dories out in the bay. People waved at him, greeting him like a returning hero. There was a town on the shore now, The jungle had been pushed back, and alongside temporary shacks, more permanent buildings were under construction. There were even farms. The change was profound. Gavin wasn't sure why he was surprised, but he was. He hadn't even been gone very long, but he'd helped establish the fundamentals. They'd warehoused the tens of thousands of yellow bricks he'd made, and they'd obviously been putting them to good use. 50,000 people with purpose, good leadership, and all the tools they needed could do a lot of work in a short time. What didn't surprise him was that the Third Eye was waiting for him on the beach. Being a seer must be terribly handy. Which was why he was here. He couldn't believe he hadn't thought of it sooner. He was going into battle, and he'd spent, perhaps wasted was more accurate, several days scouting out their positions while he knew a seer. A true seer, who didn't couch what she saw in mystical jargon and vague pronouncements. Gavin beached the skimmer and jumped lightly onto the sand. The Third Eye wore a simple white dress, belted with a golden sash. She'd once said that she was usually modest. It was, he'd come to see, actually true. She held a hand out, and Gavin kissed it. She smiled, delighted, and Gavin thought there was something softer about her this time.
My apologies about last time.
My lady?
If I spoiled your marriage for you the last time you washed up on my beach. I try not to ruin futures for people, but I was under some stress. I make mistakes.
Gavin looked at her radiant face and was glad she had reminded him he was a married man. He was terribly in love with Karis, but this woman tugged at him on several layers beneath the rational.
Me too. Just exactly how much do you...
Hold on. Corvin is right down on the pier. I think he's been so busy he may not have seen you come in.
She offered her arm, and he took it, escorting her through the crowds. The people noticed, and they stared, and many of them bobbed their heads to both of them. But Gavin knew this kind of deference. It was the kind of respect men on campaign give to their general. The protocol peeled back to its bare, necessary layers. These people were hard at work, and they had worked alongside the Third Eye for months. They adored and respected her, maybe loved her, but they had work to do. And she had no bodyguards now. That spoke either to an unprecedented level of peace here, or perhaps her prescience. Hard to kill a seer, one would guess. They walked together out to the pier, where Corvin Danavis was speaking to three men who were gesturing to what appeared to be plans for a shipyard. He turned and looked shocked. He ran, literally ran over to Gavin and embraced him. Gavin loved him for that. He embraced his one true friend hard, and then released him.
Corvin, you old dog. You look well.
Corvin was growing out his mustache again, though it wasn't yet long enough to dangle beads in. He looked 10 years younger.
Do you know how hard it is to negotiate with people who can see the future, Lord Prism? I can't believe you did this to me. But, yes, I suppose that working 20 hours a day agrees with me. Or perhaps it's the company I get to keep during the other four.
Gavin had no idea what he was talking about. Then he saw the ring on Corvin's finger a moment before the man stepped over to the Third Eye and kissed her, picked her up, and spun her in a quick circle.
No disaster?
The Third Eye smiled mischievously.
It was a political necessity.
A duty. A burden.
Gavin couldn't believe he hadn't seen it. Of course, it probably had been a political necessity. Corvin, the leader of the invaders, the Third Eye, not quite the leader, but the most respected among the island's inhabitants, both single, both desperately needing to bind their people together. It had been a duty. But sometimes fate is kind, and that which is your duty is also exactly what you were made for. It also would have made things incredibly awkward if Gavin had bedded the woman his best friend ended up marrying. A disaster.
Are you going to tell him?
Tell him?
Ah, oh, men. You went to the Spectrum and...
You know? Oh, of course. Oh, that's unnerving. You haven't told him?
I hate spoiling the future. Besides, you're the one who paid the price for it. It's only right you should get to tell him.
Tell me what?
You're a full satrap. High Lord Danavis.
What? What?
Full satrap. Full responsibilities, full privileges. You get to name your own color. Small flotilla of ships carrying supplies and diplomats is already on its way here.
3 weeks out, and bringing along more than a few problems, along with their life-saving goods and medicines.
You knew about this?
You didn't think I'd marry some mere washed-up general, do you?
A satrap? You said it would be honorary at best, that getting votes would be the work of future generations.
Meh.
They stabbed me in the back. I replied in kind. By the way, you voted for war.
Did I have good reason?
Mm-hmm.
Color Prince?
None other.
You left me here, you know. Abandoned me. Do you know how hard it is to be married to a woman who knows everything?
Almost as hard as it is to be married to a man who exaggerates.
They were deeply in love. Smitten. At their age. Sad.
I hear you finally came to your senses.
She tells you about Karis.
Orholm is kind.
Orholm? I thought you barely believed in him.
Corvin, I'd love to spend the next 6 months here, but I need to speak with your wife. The war's moving on, and I need to leave within 2 hours to make it back before I run out of light.
They went to a tavern nearby. Gavin filled them in on everything that had happened. Everything, from destroying the Blue Island to throwing that girl off the balcony. He was glad to see that the Third Eye hadn't known all of it.
The real question is if we can save the Seven Satrapies.
Can we save Rue?
One time in 1,000. Your father would have to think that he was the brilliant mind coming up with 6 strategies that you simply aren't in a good place to feed to him.
She touched Gavin's hand, and the yellow Luxon eye tattooed into her forehead glowed. She continued to hold his hand, and the glow brightened until it was blinding. She threw Gavin's hand away from her like it was a serpent. She stood abruptly and went out. Gavin stood, bewildered, but Corvin was faster.
Stay. I'll take care of this.
He was gone for 5 minutes. If he hadn't known that the Third Eye was the real thing, he would have been suspicious. The skeptic in him was stirring even now. This seemed perfectly orchestrated to paralyze or terrorize him. The Third Eye came back in, unsteadily. She avoided looking Gavin in the eye as she sat across from him.
You want to know the disposition of forces at Rue? I can tell you that.
Are you trying to scare the hell out of me?
Gavin, listen to your mother.
Now that is the kind of thing I expect from a charlatan. I thought you weren't big on parlor tricks.
You remember Koyos White Oak?
I remember seeing a wall fall on him 16 years ago.
He's the Color Prince.
I saw a wall fall on him. A burning wall.
He's the Color Prince.
I saw a wall.
I'm not the moron in this conversation, Guile. Please don't speak to me as if I am. How many times have you escaped certain death? You think your enemies might never have the same good fortune?
What? But does Karis know this?
Koyos. That night when Karis had wept about her dead brothers, she'd said his name. She'd been trying to work up the nerve to tell him, but even telling him would have felt like betraying her brother.
Have you told Karis all your secrets?
Fair question. He told her most of them, but no, not all.
You're wasting time. You need to go back to the Chromeria and get Karis.
She's injured.
Stop interrupting. She'll be well enough to fight. The men your father sent to beat her were very careful, very professional. They were told to inflict pain, not injury.
It was my father. That piece of...
That part isn't important right now. If you don't get her, just get her.
Tell me.
Telling you changes things.
Her golden eye was glowing.
Tell me!
If you don't get her, you'll die. A musket ball tomorrow, or a green-white the next day. If you do, the old gods awaken, Gavin.
The old gods waken? That's all you'll tell me?
You've lost green. You know what happens. This battle to save Rue, it's noble, but it's the wrong battle. You already know that.
There's a green bane, like the blue.
You can't stop them all, Gavin. It's impossible.
Where is it?
If I tell you, you'll die, you damned fool. Ask the right question.
Am I going to... What do I need to do?
Mercy isn't weakness. And love carries a heavy price.
I think I'm more the kind of a man who...
If you don't figure out exactly what kind of man you are, there's no hope for you at all.
If you were going for ominous, that was pretty good.
I do omens for a living. You want better? Then go now and bed your wife. Bruised and broken as you are, it may be your last chance.
Now that was ominous.
Kevin stood with a bravado he didn't feel. He'd learned things, but not the way he'd wanted to.
Gavin, you came to ask where their forces are. They've taken the fort on Ruick Head, though they haven't put up their own flag. They hope to sink your fleet at the neck. And Rue has several hundred traitors already in the city, including the mercenaries the Atashians hired to protect them. The prince's men have been hard at work.
How long till I lose the rest of my colors?
That depends on what kind of man you are.
What would you guess?
If you're as good a man as I think you are, you don't have as much time left as you think you do.
Her eyes were full of compassion, except for that pitiless third eye, which saw only truth. Gavin walked out the door and saw Corvin. The man had been weeping, but had dried his eyes and was trying to pretend he hadn't been.
Oh, Holum's great Harry's. Can't be that bad, can it?
The men embraced, said nothing, walked together down to the beach. The third eye followed them. People had gathered, realizing who Gavin was. They watched from a distance. They knelt. It was like they didn't know how to tell Gavin what he meant to them. It was just as well, because he didn't know how to take it. He waved to them, nodded.
You said before that you were sometimes wrong, right?
Sometimes.
One in a thousand. It faced worse.
Dazen.
Corvin swallowed, looking out to sea, looking at nothing.
My lord, she tells me if I go with you, I can only make it worse. Otherwise I'd... My lord, it has been an honor.
And then Gavin got onto the skimmer, and Corvin pushed the boat out into the gentle surf.
Or Holum guide you back, Lord Prism.
He was sure that she didn't mean back to the island.
I'm going to kill him someday. But he's good at what he does, I'll give him that.
Zymon rose from their bed in the pre-dawn darkness. Liv was already up and dressed, almost finished fighting her hair into some order.
I'll let him do the work of uniting the satrapies, and then take it from him. Unless he threatens to botch it, of course.
What are you going to do? Once you become king, I mean.
Emperor. And whatever do you mean? What will I do? You're not very smart, are you?
Not smart enough to avoid you in the first place, clearly.
She froze. His charm had been slipping more and more frequently. He was a lizard beneath it. There was something wrong with him. Something thin, an essential shallowness. How had she not noticed before? When he touched her now, her flesh grew cold. Her body had known. She'd told herself that she was extricating herself carefully, but she wasn't. She was afraid. Afraid to be a woman alone in an armed camp. Such fear didn't befit a drafter. Such fear didn't befit a woman. He wanted to treat her like she was nothing. Hatred coiled in her breast. It took all of her self-control, but she turned and looked at him with a mask of cool condescension.
Zymon. Emperor, please. There is no trace of greatness in you.
She slipped out of the tent, deftly. She was shaking.
What about your big plan to make him tire of you? To escape his clutches and make him think it was his idea?
All in pieces now.
Shit!
Knowing the smart thing to do and having the makeup to do it were two different things.
To hell with him.
Liv went directly to the Color Prince's tent. He was gone. She found him instead on the outskirts of the camp, greeting new drafters who'd abandoned Rue or other Atashian towns. At least half of them were on their last year or two of life.
Cowards.
But armies are composed of those who join for bad reasons as well as good, and the prince despised no one who helped him. Liv approached him and bowed deeply.
Magnificence, may I have a private word with you?
The prince measured her, then excused himself.
Zymon is planning to betray you.
Thank you. Will you teach this class of recruits for me?
What? Thank you? That's all?
He looked at her sharply.
My apologies, my prince. I didn't mean to raise my voice.
He favored her with an indulgent smile.
When did you find this out?
I'd suspected he had an overlarge opinion of himself, but he didn't say anything treasonous until this morning.
And you came straight to me?
Yes, my lord.
A retainer emerged from the ranks and started coming toward the prince. He lifted a hand, telling the man to wait.
You knew?
I knew.
So, did you send me to spy on him?
You tell me.
You weren't testing him. You were testing me.
Oh?
You knew he'd betray you. You didn't know if I would. So I passed. Was Zymon in on this?
If he had been, that would mean he was still favored by the Color Prince. And the way Liv had left him wasn't simply over her loyalty to the prince. She might have just made a powerful enemy, without at the same time making a more powerful friend.
Do you know what happens to an egg when you keep it warm?
It hatches.
And when you make it hot?
I'm not sure.
It cooks. Everything has a proper time and season. Some things rushed are spoiled. This is why so many of the Chromeria's whites go mad and become dangerous. Not because whites are innately so, but because their drafters get to the end of their human span and then panic. Panicked people do shoddy work. If instead they work deliberately over a course of years to prepare themselves for the transition, their odds of success increase dramatically. If they had people to teach them what to do, just imagine what we might accomplish.
That's wise. And that's what you're doing with Zymon.
Zymon is incredibly gifted and very, very dangerous. There is no human warmth in him. Only a fool would trust a man like that. But by using him, I've found that I can trust you. Now, did he know you were coming here?
I'm afraid he might. I've made a terrible enemy of him, my lord.
Forgive me for this, but raise your voice now and swear that Zymon's a traitor, that you wouldn't lie to me and so forth. Do it, now!
My lord, I swear to you, Zymon is a traitor. I would never lie to you. You have to believe me.
Liv threw herself at the Color Prince's knees. He backhanded her across the cheek, hard enough it rattled her teeth. Two guards lifted Liv and pulled her away. Just around a tent, out of sight, but still close enough that she could hear a little of what was said.
Zymon, I'm giving you a small force, drafters and soldiers, whatever composition you want, but only 20 men, and make sure you bring along gunners in that number. I want you to cross the neck at midnight, climb the cliffs, and take Ruik Head. There may or may not be ropes waiting for you. We have spies, but they're criminals and prone to hysteria. Not trustworthy. Regardless, take Ruik Head and keep flying the Atashian flag. The Chromeria's fleet is 2 days out. Let the scout ships through unaccosted. Only open up when the main fleet first starts through the neck. I expect you to sink at least a dozen ships. At least. Oh, and take no greens with you. Take blues. The Bane will be disorienting until Atarat is come.
Zymon said something.
No, absolutely not. I have need of her.
Zymon said something else. Liv cursed to herself for not being able to hear, but she couldn't without exposing herself.
Zymon, I trusted you with a vital mission once, and you failed. You lost a magic worth more than 10 of you. It was my mistake to trust you with that, so I didn't punish you for it. I had hoped to abort this war before it began. I thought it worth the risk. You're one of the very best I have, Zymon. You know that I've been lenient with you, and why? For a privileged few, I tolerate one failure. One. Understood?
Commander Ironfist had Kip and Kruxer join him on the central skimmer. Instead of heading directly for Ruik Bay, as Gavin had, Commander Ironfist had them work their way up the Blood Forest coast. Though they'd only been skimming for 2 hours, Kip was feeling antsy. He didn't like being trapped on a boat. He tried to enjoy the salt spray and the speed and the small towns they passed. The sea today was much calmer, and the sky was blindingly blue. The sea itself changed color with every bay and shallow. They came upon the scout ship so fast they barely had time to split the sea chariots off. They rounded a point, and there it was, approaching the point from the opposite side, flying its broken chain flag. Two of the sea chariots darted off in front of the rest of them. The Kaka was a small ship, 25 paces long, with a crew of perhaps 20 and lateen sails, and 6 medium guns per side, balanced on the gunwales the old way instead of outfitted with gun ports. It didn't get a single shot off. A single sailor was manning the swivel gun on the front, trying to load it, when the two sea chariots passed on either side. One set its hull wrecker near the prow, the other on the opposite side near the stern. Then they broke away. There was fire, but it was quenched quickly as the ship went down. With 4 wide holes in the hull, it didn't take long. The sea chariots regrouped and sealed their individual boats back into place. By the time they were finished, the Kaka was underwater. A dozen men and women were paddling in the water or clinging to debris.
Commander, should we take captives for interrogation?
The speaker was Watch Captain Beryl. Iron Fist looked at the people in the water and judged how far they were from shore. It wasn't far. Leaving them wouldn't be a death sentence, but Kip knew that they didn't have the space to take captives and still continue to sink ships.
Our mission's elsewhere. By the time they could bring word back to the generals, our battles will be finished, I think.
They left, and hadn't gone half an hour farther up the coast before a putrid smell rolled over the skimmer. It was death.
There's a village a league or two from here. Weedling, it's called. I grew up just a few bays down.
The skimmer cruised slowly into Weedling Bay, and Kip was relieved to see that the village wasn't burned to the ground. But there were hundreds of gray shapes crowded onto the beach so thickly that there was hardly any sand visible. Perhaps a dozen locals were walking across the backs of the shapes, carrying machetes and buckets.
Are those beached whales?
Oh, Horlam, have mercy.
The wind brought a blast of putrefying flesh and blood to the skimmer, and Kip almost gagged. He felt funny. Not just sick or disgusted, but trapped. He wanted to jump into the waves and swim. He wasn't even sure where. It was a crazed, caged animal feeling.
Commander, I don't feel so good. It's just dead fish. Khalif and Presser, draft us some oars.
They drafted oars and oarlocks, and the blackguards rowed the ship in. When they got within 40 paces, the villagers finally noticed them. Some fled outright, while the others merely watched them with hooded eyes. A tall, older man with some kind of long-bladed spear that he'd been using to cut into the thick whale skin stood on a half-butchered whale with one hand on his hip.
Well, the sea, she brings us all sorts of insanity, don't she?
Are you the Khan here?
Such as we have.
I'm Commander Iron Fist of the Cromeria Blackguard.
Iron Fist? Aye, we've heard that name here. Curious boat you have. I'm Khan Mossbeard.
He didn't, so far as Kip could tell, actually have moss in his beard, but it was dyed a pale lichen green.
What happened here?
Something's been building for a couple of weeks. Though it's not near so strong today. Livestock acting like there were coyotes in the yard, but none were. You know what I mean? Plow horses and oxen shying away from their harnesses. Horses spooked. Pigs attacking like all of a sudden they thought they were javelinas. We had people injured by the score, by beasts they'd known their whole lives. We're farmers and fishermen here. We knew something wasn't right. Still don't know what, though. They say great powers clash, small folk suffer. I don't know.
Iron Fist didn't interrupt. He gestured for the rest of the blackguards not to speak either. If the stench of the decaying whales hadn't been so overpowering, Kip would have jumped off the boat.
What's gotten into me?
Whales beached yesterday. Heard of it before. Never seen it. Never heard of so many doing it at once. Handy placement if they're going to do it, I thought at first. We could get enough meat and oil to last us years, but...
He pulled his tunic up, and Kip saw that he had a bandage around his side. It was bloody.
I started giving orders, like I'd done 1,000 times. People here know you got to work together for big jobs like this, but they attacked me instead. Men and women I've known my whole life attacked me and run off. The animals are gone too. It's like a madness came, except it didn't hit us all. The steadiest men and women, we're all still here. Cora over there, he used to be an idiot. Had fits when he didn't get exactly one biscuit at dawn, exactly 2 pieces of bacon at lunch. Now he's as right as you or me. But them's were normal. Most of them are long gone. Don't know where, don't know what to do but butcher what we can and hope this all blows over like a squall.
Did any of the people act, oddly before they went?
Norrell turned to Commander Iron Fist.
Your pardon, Commander.
We're good people here. Decent. Devout.
People do strange things when they're not in their right mind. Things that aren't truly their fault.
Seemed like folk lost all sense of decoration, if you take my meaning. I saw folks were rotten like animals. Folks walking about naked. Folks grunting and howling and barking. Barking. You heard people called barking mad? I thought it was just something people say. I saw men I've known 40 years barking at each other. Scared me off to death, like they was made animals in all but body.
Whatever it is, it's driving the animals mad too.
You feel it?
I think we better leave.
Kip, you feel it?
Absolutely.
Nera, you?
No.
Commander?
Maybe a little.
Will, you?
I feel half mad, to tell you the truth.
It's the greens. It's something wrong in green. A lost loss of self-control, rebellion against authority. The color prince is poisoned green.
Atirat.
Whatever it is, it's not only affecting drafters. It's hitting Muns and even animals.
Mossbeard, we're doing what we can to stop it. Your folk may come back. All may be restored to you yet.
Khan Mossbeard looked at them with steel eyes.
Restored? I caught my wife with another man, and when she saw me, she just laughed and kept on. I looked into her eyes and couldn't tell if it was madness plain and simple, or if the madness was letting her do what she'd always wanted.
Iron Fist said nothing.
Go play at your wars. Go visit your plagues on someone else. It's always the little man as pays the piper. I killed my wife, sir. The woman who stayed with me through drought and blight and fire and the death of four daughters for 24 years. There is no restoration here.
They rode away, and Mossbeard went right back to slaughtering the whale he stood on without giving them another look.
Greens, you tell me if it gets too bad. If you feel like you're going to turn on us, tell us. I'm not going to lose anyone today, through madness or death.
They went all the way up the Atashian coast that day, almost as far as Ruik Head, and they sank half a dozen ships. On many of them, the sailors were in disarray, unwilling or unable to follow orders and act as coherent units. It made them easy targets, and they sank them without any trouble. It was frankly frightening how easy it was. With a combination of their speed and the explosive power of the hull wreckers and the fact that the ships they were preying on were distracted and had never seen anything like the sea chariots, much less prepared for them, they sank ship after ship. But their feeling of invincibility was broken when Potts took a ball in the shoulder. They bound him up and made it all the way to Ruik Head, where a fort towered on top of the red cliffs there, bristling with artillery that could reach far out into the narrow neck of the Ruik Bay. They approached only close enough to look at the fort's flags. It was still flying the Atashian colors. Commander Iron Fist turned them back toward the fleet, and they made it back in an hour before dusk, which was a good thing because it took them another hour of consulting the sextant and compass and skimming and guessing and consulting the sextant and compass again to find the fleet, which was making good progress toward Ruik Head. 3 days out now. Kip and the other Greens were relieved to get away from the Atashian coast, though, and he could feel the madness receding as they got farther away. They talked, and they couldn't be certain because measuring feelings of growing dread wasn't exactly as simple as sliding beads, but they thought that whatever was causing the madness had to be coming from the Color Prince's camp itself, or from one of his ships nearby. No one seemed to want to talk about the prospect of fighting a battle when men were as likely to jump off their ships as they were to obey an order. It seemed an invitation to chaos and slaughter. Gavin didn't come back that night. Kip wondered if he'd died somewhere, far away and alone. The next morning, Commander Iron Fist headed out again, but this time he wouldn't let anyone who could draft green come with him. Kip was left alone. He waved to Kruxer and grimaced at his own ill fortune. When he turned to go inside, he found himself staring at Grinwoody.
Young master, Lux Lord Guile finds himself with a spare hour. He wishes to play Nine Kings with you. Attend me, please.
And if I won't come?
Long swim home.
Gavin barely made it to the Chromeria before nightfall, the skimmer going slower and slower as his eyes strained for light. At least the waters were still enough that he was able to land directly on the backside of Little Jasper, where there was a tiny dock, rather than having to draft an entire dory by starlight and row into Big Jasper and walk. Stepping onto the wood, he disintegrated the yellow skimmer. He rubbed his arms and shoulders, hoping they didn't cramp. The muscles were trembling and weak from his journey, even though the last 2 hours had been slow going. He was starting to feel a sick foreboding that yellow was getting harder to draft. He hoped it was simply the gathering night, and not that he would wake tomorrow, unable to draft yellow at all. If so, he was going to have a hard time getting back to the fleet before the battle was over. He tried to smile over the rising terror. At least he was going to spend tonight in Karras's arms.
To the Evernight with everything else.
What had the Third Eye said?
Bruised and broken as you are, it might be your only chance.
Gavin was sore and fatigued, but he was neither bruised nor broken. So either she had meant the U to mean Karras, or she was simply wrong. Regardless, he wasn't going to solve the mysteries of prophecy, and he didn't care to. He just wanted to see his wife. His wife. How odd that phrase seemed. And yet, how he'd missed her. He felt it keenly now. Now that she was so close and his mind wasn't crowded with fighting, plotting, doing. Some part of him thought that she was going to be snatched away if he didn't hurry. He opened the lock on the stout oak door. Pulling the door open made him aware again of how tired his arms were. He tried to lift a hand over his head and couldn't. The door opened to a long, claustrophobia-inducing tunnel, barely wide enough for one man to pass with his shoulders turned. Kevin touched his hand to one of the ingenious subred switches, and from the heat of his hand, it triggered a reaction that opened panels of yellow down the length of the tunnel. Sometimes it was the simple, elegant things that could be done with magic that impressed him far more than his own brute force behemoths. 5 minutes down the tunnel deposited him at an iron gate with a different lock. He opened that and took a narrow staircase up into the front yard of the Chromeria. By the time he reached the lifts, two blackguards had fallen in step beside him. He grinned at them. He took the lift up and then the second lift to his own floor, walked past the blackguards, who didn't look surprised in the least to see him. How did they do that anyway? He walked to his own door. Thinking he heard something, he looked down the hall. The White's door was closing very slowly.
She must be asleep. Her guards are being careful not to wake her.
But still, Gavin hesitated.
You should go check that out.
For a second, he was aware of himself, poised between going into a beautiful woman and going to an old crone.
What kind of an idiot even thinks that's a choice?
Cursing himself for a fool, he left his door and strode quickly down the hall. It was rude to enter anyone's room filled with Luxon. It was treated like coming in with a pistol leveled at your host's head. And if Gavin could get away with many things, that wasn't one of them. Not with the White. So he drew in Superviolet. What they couldn't see couldn't be rude, could it? He opened her door as stealthily as it had just been shut. A crack, and then more. Bodies wearing blackguard garb lay on the floor, and a figure was treading slowly toward the White's bed, clad all in black. The light streaming in from the well-lit hallway betrayed Gavin. The figure spun, drawing a pistol from his belt in a smooth, fast motion. Gavin blasted the door open with his shoulder and dove into the White's room.
Assassin!
A gray ball nearly 2 feet across shot out of the man's hands, catching Gavin's first blackguard as he was jumping into the room and drawing his pistol. It knocked him horizontal and back into the other blackguard. The assassin had dropped his first pistol and drew another, turning to kill the White, who was awake and scrambling to get off her bed. From the floor, Gavin shot the tiniest spotlight beam of Superviolet out, and as the assassin turned, Gavin's Superviolet played over the man's hand. Then Gavin shot the rest of his Superviolet. Superviolet is delicate. All the Superviolet Gavin held probably weighed only as much as a hairpin, and it wasn't strong, but even a hairpin flung at great speed can have some effect. The Superviolet burned the air and slammed into the back of the assassin's hand, cracking bones and flinging the pistol out of the man's grip. Gray-white light flooded the chamber from a dozen sources. Gavin popped up off the floor, instinctively drawing in light to hurl blue spears at the assassin. He was all the way up and throwing his body forward to ready itself for the massive recoil of the magic he was about to throw, when he realized he hadn't drafted anything. The assassin's counter of another ball of gray light caught Gavin full in the chest. It launched him backward, and he slammed into a wall.
Green. He's not drafting gray. That's green. I just can't see it anymore.
The assassin pulled out another pistol and leveled it at Gavin. From this range, with Gavin still trying to suck in his first breath, the man couldn't miss. A sunburst of white-gray light lit the man, and Gavin saw the White standing in her bedrobe, a cloud of tiny, glowing particles floating in front of her, like motes of dust. Her hand snapped forward, and so did the entire cloud. The assassin froze, and a moment later, tiny droplets of blood formed on his skin, everywhere. His back had been turned to the White, and the tiny glassine flechettes had gone all the way through him. The assassin blinked bloody eyes, confused, knowing only that something was terribly wrong, and then he collapsed on the floor. The world didn't stop. Even as the man was falling, blackguards were bursting into the room, whistles were shrilling. A sword descended on the assassin's convulsing wrist, separating his still-loaded gun and gun hand from his body. The sudden press of bodies was almost a relief. The blackguards had their priorities: subdue the threat, secure the area, check the health of the guarded, check the health of the downed guards, notify the chain of command, and so forth. Gavin let it roll over him. He'd taken a good shot, and he'd be lucky if it turned out he hadn't cracked a rib. But he was alive, and so was the White. Oddly enough, it seemed that both of the blackguards who'd been guarding Aurea Pular were alive too. One was still unconscious, and the other could only remember being grabbed from behind and having a foul-smelling rag pressed over his face. Apparently, whoever had sent the assassin was trying to make some point about the vulnerability of the entire Chromeria by making the assassination as clean as possible. The guns and magic could only come out when the assassination was threatened with failure. They found the White's balcony door cracked open, and climbing ropes hanging past it. The ropes were hanging from the roof. The assassin must have tied the rope above, and finding the White's balcony deadbolted, decided to go to the roof and enter through the door. It was a bold plan that would allow the assassin to escape after the murder by opening the balcony door from the inside and sliding down the rope without alerting anyone. It would have given the assassin valuable minutes to escape alive. This had been no suicide mission. The Blackguard immediately began going down the tower to check every room that had a window or balcony on the north side, looking for accomplices. Gavin was shaken. A few months ago, he would have killed that assassin by himself. This time, his color blindness had almost gotten both him and the White killed. He looked at the gray lights burning everywhere in the room. They weren't gray, they were blue and green. The White had been a blue-green bichrome, so she'd obviously put in colored Lux torches so that if something like this happened, she could immediately have light available to draft in a heartbeat. With a lesser assassin, the sudden flood of light itself might have bought her a few seconds. Not this one. But regardless, between Gavin and the Blackguards interrupting, it had worked. He wondered if the White was well. She hadn't drafted in years, and she wasn't in particularly good health to begin with. Gavin stood, with the Blackguard's help, just in time for Karis to come in the door and crash into him. She grabbed him so fiercely it almost knocked him off his feet. Then he recovered his senses and hugged her back.
I heard there was an assassination attempt, and you were involved, and you scared me half to death, Gavin Guile.
You changed your hair.
She'd bleached it to blonde from its previous dark Tyrian hue. He liked it blonde.
You like it blonde?
He saved my life.
The White walked over. Walked, instead of being wheeled over. Gavin couldn't see the halo in her gray eyes, but he could see that her eyes were no longer washed out, desaturated. Now they looked like a drafter's eyes again, and there was fine red color in her cheeks. She looked stronger, younger, and yet her halos were still intact. Mercifully.
They say he spoke before he died. He said, "Light cannot be chained." Do you know what that means, Gavin?
It means we have a problem.
It means the Order of the Broken Eye exists and is choosing to reveal itself. And that means we have a problem. The Order has risen. They mean war. Now go. I know you've other things in mind for tonight, and I'll be up until all hours telling my story and giving orders and taking questions. I'll handle all this. You...
She waved him toward Karis.
You handle all that.
And then she winked.
Thank you.
No, Gavin. Thank you. Thank you.
Of course, it wasn't as easy as simply going back to his room. The room had to be searched, and Gavin held his breath when they searched the closet. And then guards had to be posted. Marissia sat on her little slave stool by the door, looking like she was trying to be invisible to Karis, but didn't want to leave without being dismissed in case Gavin needed anything. Gavin absolutely refused to have a Blackguard in the room with him.
Karis is here. She's a Blackguard.
While he argued, he gave Marissia a glance and a tiny wave. She looked grateful and slipped out the door.
We're assuming she might be preoccupied, Lord Prism.
Watch Captain Blademan was making his argument. What? Did Iron Fist offer a class in that attitude?
Someone attacked the White by climbing up to her balcony. We're not leaving you in danger.
In the end, they posted two Blackguards out on the balcony and pulled a curtain. The men were both given heavy wool cloaks and hats and told not to come inside until Gavin rapped on the glass. If he rapped on the glass. Other guards were posted outside the definitely not soundproof doors. Being worth killing was a real pain in the ass.
How are you?
He barely heard her. He was taking the chance to look at her. Really look at her for the first time. It seemed he'd been gone forever. He hadn't noticed earlier, but she still moved gingerly. The blackness and swelling had faded, though not completely. Karis healed fast.
Your eyes are healing well. How's the rest of you?
My eyes? I look like a raccoon.
She scrunched her face up like a rodent. Evan supposed that the sounds were supposed to be a raccoon.
Do that again. You're the prettiest damn raccoon I ever saw.
Oh, Gavin Golden Tongue. With that kind of eloquence, you're going to charm my... Oh? Look at that.
By some feminine magic, without apparently using her hands, her undergarment slid down her legs.
Hmm.
She kicked them aside, and grinned a self-satisfied grin at him. She looked positively devilish. Gavin's mouth went dry. She opened her robe and let it slide down her shoulders and pool on the floor as she walked toward him. Her chemise was a silk confection, clinging to her lean curves, barely coming down to her hips.
Are you well enough for me to have my way with you, my lord?
A bit bruised and broken.
He suddenly smiled.
Damn Sears. And a lot pungent. I've crossed the seas entire today. And I see that... No, don't mention Marissa. I see that there's a bath drawn. I could...
You come back and find me half naked and you want to take a bath.
She was teasing. Instead of matching wit for wit, Gavin looked straight into her eyes.
I want this to be perfect for you.
I don't want perfection. I want you, Dazen Guile.
There was a right answer to that. Gavin cupped her cheek with a hand and pulled her lips to his. She was all that was warm and soft and safe in all the world. He pulled her into his arms, and she pulled into him, glorying in the muscles of his shoulders and arms, his sheer size in comparison to hers. He obliged her by enfolding her completely in his arms.
Ribs.
Bruises, right.
She used the interruption to grab his shirt and pull it over his head.
Ah! Shoulder.
She freed the shirt more gently, and they grinned at each other.
You are stinky.
Hey, I...
Teasing!
Oh, shut up and get back here.
She grabbed his belt, tugging it loose, but he grabbed her and kissed her again. He slid his hands over the silk, gently, back to waist, to hips, to ass, and then up to cup her ass beneath the nightgown. He picked her up and carried her to their bed. Karis held him as they made love, held him with her lean, muscular legs, pulling him into her, held him with her sex, writhing against him, held him with her arms, glorying in his muscles and in him, digging her fingers into his back and subtly guiding him to what pleased her most. She held him and held him tight as he climaxed, and held him in place afterward, running her fingers through his hair, playing with his ear. He'd never felt so known and accepted in all his life. When the capacity for reason came back to him, he propped himself up on an elbow and caressed her body. Her skin was aglow in the golden lamplight, and she made no effort to cover herself, instead enjoying his gaze. There were a million ways he wanted to praise her beauty, but none of his words seemed adequate to the task. How could words tell her how she fascinated him, inflamed him, awed him? He remembered an old Blood Forest wedding vow.
With my body, I thee worship.
They made love again, wordlessly, and he gave his all to please her, interpreting every sigh and stretch and curled toe to guide him. And he took his reward, repeatedly. She only shook her head and laughed when she saw his familiar, pleased with himself grin. They lost themselves in each other for hours, talking, holding each other, crying, talking, making love again. Finally bathing together when they were sure they could make love no more, and then just holding each other, skin to skin, her back to his stomach, watching as the dawn light rose.
I love you so much, I hate you, Dazen Guile.
I love you too, Karis Guile.
Can we run away?
Where do you want to go?
You stupid man. You broke the first rule of running away, and we haven't even gotten dressed yet.
We have to get dressed, and forget it.
Her elbow into his ribs would have been a gentle nudge if he hadn't been flung into a wall last night.
Serves you right.
So what's the first rule of running away?
The dawn was red, magnificent, and he had a beautiful woman in his arms. This seemed to be the best place in the whole world.
You can't bring logic or practicality into running away. Everyone knows that.
So we can go naked.
You're impossible.
True, but on the other hand, you can't say you didn't know what you were getting yourself into.
No, that's true.
She said nothing for a while, and Gavin thought she might have drifted off to sleep. What was the saying about a red sky in the morning? Something about storms coming?
Thanks, nature. Appreciate some omens with breakfast.
I know that you've been trying. With Kip, I mean. I heard you went to his testing.
While I should have been with you, protecting you.
Protecting me?
Don't make me hurt you. You are exactly where you should have been. So, how is it going?
He's a good boy. Smart. My plan is working perfectly so far. He has no idea how talented he is. I put him with the best young fighters in the world, and he's hanging in there. By his fingernails, but hanging in.
He's not that good of a fighter, is he? Without previous training?
No, he's not. But he's made the right friends, and he's got the respect of the right people. They made it possible for him to stay in, which is as much a success in my eyes as if he'd been the best fighter there. The point of him being in the Black Guard wasn't to teach him to fight. It was misdirection. It was so he would measure himself against the best people rather than against the best whisperers and the best drafters.
You're brilliant, and your plans always work, my lord husband. But that wasn't what I was asking you about, and you know it. Misdirection indeed.
He was glad she could catch him. Glad to be known that much by this amazing woman, but not glad to be caught. His face fell. How's it going?
He's a good boy.
She waited for the but. He could tell she knew it was coming.
But he's not my son.
It was a failure to speak it.
He grins, this quirky grin, and I see his father.
All of you guile men have that grin. Even your father used to charm.
I killed Kip's father, Karis. The boy is so desperate not to be an orphan, he's latched on to me. So desperate to please, he'll do anything I ask. What will he do if he ever finds out the truth? If he came after me, tried to kill me, who could call him the betrayer? I'm raising him and making him formidable, and the more he loves me, the more he'll hate me when he finds out I've deceived him from the beginning. Through no fault of his own, he's a viper, Karis. And the tighter I hold him to me, the more likely he is to bite me.
All true? All beside the point. You kept a secret for 16 years from me, keeping it from a boy who hasn't known you and will never know your brother? Child's play. What's really going on?
Look, the soul searching is deeply meaningful and everything, but what I did before, I'd do again. Karis, if you were falling off a cliff and I could save only you or me, I'd save you, no question. Because even though I know that I can do things for the world that you can't, I don't care. I knew I should kill you, that you were the person most likely to destroy me. I knew that this was incredibly unlikely. But I love you, so I didn't care. When I look at Kip, I'd make the rational choice. And I feel bad about that. But I feel bad when I send soldiers into war. I like Kip. I wouldn't want to lose him. I want to get to know him more. But I don't love Kip. And there's nothing I can do about that.
Lord Prism!
1 minute!
Karis had an odd intensity in her eyes.
My lord, I was never helplessly in love with you. Well, maybe when we were children I was. But in the years since, my feelings for you have come and gone. But my admiration for the man I saw you to be never changed. You twisted me in knots because the good man I felt you were, my Dazen, and the man I thought I knew you to be, Gavin, were so different. But I saw that you were the kind of man who was worthy of my love. I knew the man I would marry would be good and strong and gentle and honorable and smart and stubborn enough to handle me and... Hold on, I know there must be some other virtue.
Charming. Never forget charming.
Sometimes I could do with less of that. I chose you.
Ah, you couldn't resist me.
Yes. Yes, I could. I chose you.
How startlingly unromantic.
Gavin was reminded of her affinity for the blue virtues, despite being a red and a green, for thinking things through, for making the columns add up.
I love you, body, soul, and breath. Is that unromantic? Love is not a whim. Love is not a flower that fades with a few fleeting years. Love is a choice wedded to action, my husband. And I chose you. And I will choose you every day for the rest of my life.
Lord Prism, the Spectrum is meeting right now and they wish to speak with you. Lord Prism?
Dazen, no matter what happens, I love you.
Gavin had a sudden intuition.
Karis, what are you talking about? What's going on?
I just...
What did the Third Eye tell you?
Silence. He'd hit it. He could tell. Karis moved to get up, but Gavin grabbed her hand.
Karis, please.
She looked back at him, then looked away.
I'll tell you, but I'm not telling you anything else, no matter what you say. Understood?
Understood.
She hedged, of course, and she said she doesn't see everything perfectly.
I have a third eye, with less than helpful help. Yes, I'm familiar.
She told me when you were going to die.
Then she stood and threw a robe around her shoulders.
Now get up, lazy bones. We've got a long day ahead of us.
She smiled, but it didn't touch her eyes.
I lured you here under false pretenses.
The Red had, of course, taken the captain's cabin, and though he'd put curtains on the windows, it wasn't nearly as pitch dark as his own apartments back at the Chromeria. Kip had forgotten to soak up superviolet light before coming in, so he was at the mercy of the dim light and his ears. But Luxlord Giles seemed to be in unusually good spirits, and that put Kip on his guard.
I don't want to play a game with you. I want to apologize.
Kip remembered the glasses he carried and put the sub-red on. It didn't help that much.
For what?
For trying to have you killed.
I'm sorry, what?
Believe me, I thought you did owe me an apology for refusing to die. But this is me apologizing to you.
You're going to have to do better than that.
Outlined against the thin light coming beneath one curtain and glowing in sub-red, Kip saw Andros Gile tense, his fists ball.
Remember what you are, boy. You just come to the Chromeria, and my son barely knew you. If you'd cracked under the pressure and jumped to your death, it would have been a very brief scandal, brought up idly, revived some 6 months later when I had new evidence found that the woman who'd claimed to be our mother confessed to lying, having taken money from a rival family to smear Gavin. Then it would have been forgotten. You would have been just another attack on a family that has endured 1,000, an anecdote of an attempted smear on a great house.
Mistress Hillel? You sent that fat woman who tried to throw me out of the tower?
Andros kept talking, but Kip was still struggling to come to grips with what he'd said first.
Was that her name? Oh, and while I'm clearing the air, I paid those idiots in your blackout training class to block you. No harm done, right? Regardless, sir, I'm sorry.
You're sorry?
Kip saw an eyebrow rise above one of the big lenses, as if the man was wondering how stupid this fat boy was. Andros Gile raised his index finger.
I want you to know, Kip, I haven't apologized to anyone in 20 years.
Oh, I'm honored.
Well, if that's behind us, perhaps you would like to play some Nine Kings.
What? What? No! You tried to kill me! You can't just try to kill people because they're inconvenient!
And Roscoe's head tilted like a dog's, trying to understand this odd, odd boy.
Reality begs to differ.
This is all a screen! A distraction! You killed Lucia!
Kip saw her again, stepping into the line of fire. He saw her face, bloody, neck torn open by a musket ball, pumping blood, blood, blood.
Who?
The girl in my Blackguard class who took the bullet you meant for me!
What are you talking about?
Someone tried to shoot me during training! They killed her instead!
Why would I go to the trouble and expense to block you from the Blackguard if I intended to kill you before you could get in? I meant you to be a failure, not a corpse.
Maybe you were making doubly sure you stopped me.
Oh, it's nice that you have such a high opinion of yourself, but use that puny brain of yours. All these accusations. Again, if you were killed, there'd be an investigation. The boys who agreed to block you from the Blackguard would come forward. After all, it's one thing to make someone fail and have to try again next season, but something else altogether to kill them. You start killing people and consciences get pricked. You think I'd leave my seal where it could be seen like that? You think I would fail twice the same way? No, boy, believe me, if I wanted you dead, you would be.
As insulting as it was, Kip thought it was probably true. In fact, he thought it was more likely true because Andros Gile had been insulting him when he said it.
So, why'd you try to block me from the Blackguard?
To foil my son. He has plans for you, and he was defying me. He needed to be punished, and reminded of certain verities.
So why tell me now? What do you want?
Kip had no doubt that the loathsome old man did have a plan. He wanted something from Kip.
I could go tell...
Tell whom? Please.
Kip realized that the man could confess with impunity. He was right. No one was going to take Kip's word, especially not with an utter lack of evidence.
Kip, I have to tell you something, and I don't expect you believe me, but maybe you will someday. I owe you my life, boy. Oh, not in any melodramatic sense, of course. My wife, your grandmother, left me and committed suicide. Albeit the suicide of the freeing. I loved her. I lived for her. And she rejected me, preferring to die rather than spend another day in my company. Have you ever faced a rejection so profound?
Kip thought of his mother, choosing to blast her brain on haze or any other intoxicant she could get until she was able to forget him, committing a slower, less noble suicide day by day. But Andros Skyle wasn't looking for commiseration.
I wanted to die. I considered following her and laying open my veins in the bath. And do you know what saved me?
Me?
Don't flatter yourself. 9 kings. Distractions saved me. Even this old heart takes time to muddle through grief. But those distractions kept me alive long enough to do it. My petty tortures of you kept my mind occupied, gave me something to look forward to. Would Kip fail here? What could I come up with to take away from him when he lost our game tomorrow? How else could I test the boy in ways that strained you but gave you some chance for victory?
You did not let me win! Don't even pretend!
Yeah, you think your wits are a match for mine? Well, I'll let you wonder. Now shut your mouth! I'm trying to thank you.
Kip fell into sullen silence, feeling abruptly like a child again. Robbed of his rage, he felt powerless in Andros's august presence.
Well, yeah. Thank you. That is all.
That's it?
The man sank down lower in his chair, grimaced.
You've earned my respect, Kip. You've overcome adversity that would have crushed lesser men. You surprised me. Not once, but several times. When I think of you, I'm disgusted and disappointed that my son could make this. And yet, despite this blubber and this loud mouth and this utter lack of self-control, these Tyrian manners and...
He waved a hand as if there was much more objectionable about Kip, but that it was a tangent.
Yeah. Despite it all, Kip, you consistently win. I have lost my wife and all my boys now, one way or another. Perhaps I am to blame for some shred of that. But you, Kip... You have proved you're a guile. I will hinder you no more.
He turned away and gestured Kip to go. Kip walked to the door slowly, bewildered.
Perhaps...
The lonely old man in the darkness did not turn.
Perhaps someday we could play that last game you owe me.